When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
If Australia was a footy team, Fraser McGurk would play. Nathan Buckley, hello to you.
G'day, Jared. How are you? I've got lots of questions.
Okay.
Why, when a coach or a team like makes a decision like this, and we see a precocious talent and he's not pushed up when we believe he should be put in, do we get impatient? Are we too impatient in that regard? We don't have all the information, do we? Do we think that maybe there might be some tough love on this kid that he needs to develop in other areas? And I don't know any of the answers to these questions. But they seem to have made some pretty good decisions over the last 10 years, the Australian Cricket Coaches Board, etc., to put the team in a pretty good position. So why don't we trust those people?
I think that's very sound. There's a whole set of good decisions that the Australian cricket selectors have made.
Yep.
And at the forefront of that is the development of Cameron Green.
Yep.
When they did trust youth. So they took on a very unusual project of allowing him to serve an apprenticeship in international cricket, and they are getting great dividends from that 25 tests into the career.
Yep.
I think...
And we've got to remember that all of the players that are incumbents at the moment were once young players that had to break in at some point.
Yeah, so
some of them earlier than others, some of them later than others, but have they not got their decisions on personnel right more often than not?
Probably. And I think the best case study is Dave Warner.
Right.
Who it took incredible imagination and dare to buck the age-old system of first-class cricket and the like and propel him into international cricket and unlock the possibilities.
Yes.
And they have been paralysed by the end of Warner's career. So Warner has called his own time and run his own shots rather than any sort of intervention.
And we see
selectors.
That. But do we believe?
And so the next young player who looks like he needs the bunk up that Warner was given to get his international career underway, is being held back while Warner finishes off his career. So I would say the set of selectors from the time with Warner would have picked Fraser McGurk now.
Who did Warner take over at the time? Do we know?
I don't even know.
Because when we consider all this information, it's not just the young fella doesn't exist in a vacuum. It's who he takes over. I've always seen, and this is, I might show my naivety, but I see cricket as an individual sport played as a team. There really are, especially when you're batting, there are 11 individual units there, and especially at the top of the order, like you've got to. You are your own entity dealing with the conditions of the time and the bowling of the time to be able to apply your trade. But there is chemistry in teams, there is chemistry in locker rooms, and there is a feeling of, yes, we're heading in the right direction and that the leadership are making the right decision for us and the environment that we are a part of. You have to believe that they're considering all of that to make these decisions and to know when the time is right. If he was a footballer, maybe he would be playing. And I say, let's put Fraser McGurk with Jed Walter. Jed Walter's the one. So if Jed Walter was on the Brisbane Lions list, would he be playing by now? And I think the answer would be yes. But if you don't have a Jed Walter there, you're probably not going to make some hard calls on some of your senior players, because the next best option is not great for the team, for the greater good. So there's so many different variables that you need to consider. Now, Gold Coast have pushed Jed Walter up in front of Casbolt, in front of a couple of others, because this kid might not be, he's raw and he is the Fraser McGurk, and we love the way he goes about it, but he's just going to keep getting better and we need to build around him. Now, that might be the decision that you think should happen, but you're not seeing.
Yeah, and I think, so there's a couple that have come through here, and I reckon both are right. So Tim in Perth, Australia's record in World Cups would suggest otherwise, Gerald, which I take it is deliberate. I'd say a phenomenal formula. So Australia is excellent in World Cups, heavy-duty players. Last World Cup made the really intuitive decision to go with Labuschagne and Smith in the middle order when most of us initially thought that wasn't the way, but they needed heavy-duty players and won the tournament. Absolutely right. And the next one is a famous economist once said, when the facts change, I change my mind. What do you do? The Australian selectors would do well to employ that theory. This is not speculating around Fraser McGurk. This is happening in real time in the best tournament in the world against international caliber bowlers who he would theoretically face at the World Cup. This is happening.
The suggestion here is that Shane Watson was injured and allowed Warner to come in. Now, I don't know whether that's a fact or not, but there are so many factors that come into timing. Some of them in control, some of them out of control. And this is the difficulty of leadership, management, coaching, because you will often be criticised for different calls that you do or do not make. And you end up having to live and die by those decisions in the long term. In the short term, there will often be some criticism. And sometimes in the long term, you've got it wrong. But, who knows? I mean, I don't know whether this is the right decision. It's what is clear is this kid, and you sent me the links and I've had a look at them. He has a great eye. He's hitting to all areas of the field and he's set up to attack this particular style of game in a manner that seems to be taking that competition, the IPL, by storm. So we know that to be true. Whether it's the right time and the right call for a team to go and do what it needs to do in a different forum in a 50 over. It's a 50 over.
20.
Game. It's
20.
It's a 2020. Yep. So it's like for like.
It's like for like. And well, this tournament is changing the nature of T20 before our very eyes.
Do you think Australia can win it without?
I don't know the answer to that. Mm. The last tournament Australia missed the semi-finals. The previous tournament Australia won sort of against all expectation. So they were right the first time and then held on too long into the second tournament.
The other thing we need to consider and is that a 2020 format versus a 50 versus a test, there's probably you're more risk, you're less risk averse the closer you come to the shorter form. So you're more prepared to take risks. You're more prepared to pick a player, or you should be more prepared to pick a player who is going to give you like a 10 out of 10 and just win a game in two overs versus being a safe option, aren't you not? Yep. Are you not?
I think, the long they're not prepared to alter the long-term plan, and this is long-term planning for World Cups. The point, mate, Australia is very good at planning for World Cups and excellent in tournament play, but there's just something suddenly on the horizon. I would have had him in the 15. I'm not saying I would have opened with him in the first game. You've got a lot of time until June to figure that out.
So what?
But I would not have left him on the shelf.
Philosophically, who is the best 12th, 13th, 14th, 15th? Do you need bowlers or should you have batters?
I've got the blend here of the team is you need a second spinner, so Zampa and Agar. So 15 is a really tight number for
cricket. Yes, it is, because I'd imagine that you need more support on your bowling than your batting.
Yeah, so there's Stark, Cummins, Hazelwood, and then Nathan Ellis would be the reserve quick, which you must have.
Yep.
You need a backup spinner, so Zampa with Agar. They're taking two keepers, which is interesting, Matthew Wade and Josh Inglis. So there's the potential of you could take a punt there, and if one of them got injured, bring the other one across. You could have Inglis outside the squad with a chance to come in. You could bite the bullet around a player like Marcus Stoinis. So you've got a stacked middle order, Marsh, Maxwell, Stoinis, David and Green. So is Green going to play ahead of Stoinis, or is Stoinis going to play ahead of Green? So you can do that in your planning. Or you could go, Fraser McGurk is going to outperform Dave Warner on all the trajectories that we're seeing in front of us, and go, now is the time. Regardless of what all the promises that have been made in the past, you go, it just changed. The circumstances just changed.
So it's your call. Are you taking Warner out of the 15 or the second keeper?
I would take Inglis out of the 15.
So that you know that you could go to him if there was an injury.
And this is what happened. There was a change in last time's World Cup squad. Inglis was a player who got injured. Cam Green came in. So I would do that, or I would sit Stoinis.
Yep.
If you work on the basis that Green's going to play ahead of him. And if Green's not going to play ahead of Stoinis, then you could sit that. And then you could keep Warner and Fraser McGurk in a scenario where we'll make our decision in June. But I absolutely would have had him in the 15 to have made it a possibility. All right, I've got to work out how to service all of these messages that are pouring through 0433 98 11 16. The 40 Winks temper text, the difference is temper. And the Alltel open line is 1-300-736-736, Alltel, the better business telco. Barrett Sundaresan is going to join me as the morning goes to our footy topics next. Nathan Buckley for Supergroups, from 1 tonne to 8 tonne. Supergroups are the masters of Kubota excavators. Nathan Buckley for Supergroups, first picked every week for Kubota excavators, supergroups.com.au. I've walked into trouble, Bucks.
Yeah, you have. I've got to read this one out. Listening to Bucks talk about cricket is like listening to my missus talk about footy or my mate talking about how the Blues will win the flag. No idea. Please just stop, Bucks, and stick to footy. So, look, I needed to jump on the Grenada, so I'm sorry, Otto. But Jared had a little bit of shit on his liver and he needed to get it off, and I was the one that was caught in the firing line. Right, and yeah. So were you.
You're here. We have to talk about this. I'm sorry. To our footy topic. So maybe let's start with Rory Sloan, who's going to do the lap of honour ahead of the showdown, which is a beautiful way to depart. I remember he spoke to me a year ago how much he loved the footy, and he was going to have to be wheeled out. He would never be able to make the choice to stop. He was going to have to be told to stop. So it's not on his terms, but my goodness, he laid it all out there. As I heard you, was it you, Kane? Yeah, talking about unconditional, and that was the word that stuck with me yesterday.
Yeah, look, I've admired him from afar. I've met him a few times, but I've admired him from afar, and there's certain players that you see when they take the field and how they carry themselves, their selflessness to their teammates, their commitment to team. Like, it was absolutely unconditional. And I said last night on the couch, he was a player that I used to, when we would have our list management meetings, it would nearly always be, and Rory Sloan, any chance? Like, he was just a player that I would have loved to have played with or coached. And I asked the question of our boys every year. And when Sando came across after coaching at Adelaide, I said, what do you reckon? Let's work away at him and see if we can prize him out. But he was committed. He was loyal. I loved the way he went about his footy. Just a man's man off the field, just seemed to be so balanced, so sure of himself. And I know that this isn't always the case when you see the perception of someone, but I admired the way that he carried himself, and his utterings around retirement were he was going to play on the Monday, and then he woke up on the Wednesday and just, I just can't do it. There's too much to lose. So he's in, 99% in, and then when the reality struck that the price here is too much to pay, he made the tough call to go against his instincts, his competitive instincts, and I can do this, and I can will myself to a couple more years, and I can help the team. But no, thankfully, he thought about his long-term future above his short-term. I suppose it's a sacrifice not being able to do what he wants to do now.
That statistical measure that you had on couch last night, that he was the seventh highest ranked player over that long period.
There's a 6-year period from 12 to 17. And you think about, what happened during that period too. Like, Sando came in 12. He was preliminary final in 12 and a tackle away from going into the granny. Stratton tackled Dangerfield there with, in the forward 50, and they lost that by 5 points, 13 and 14, and then Phil Walsh comes in at 15. Then you lose your coach or a mentor and a mate in absolutely tragic circumstances, and then to try and lead through that, as he said yesterday, he's experienced so much, and his gratitude just spilled out of him. He's just an impressive young man, first and foremost, and an amazing footballer.
So Rory Sloan's time comes to a close. Tonight at the Tribunal, the battleground is the dangerous tackle with Jack Higgins. These were our two coaches on 360 last night, Brad Scott and Sam Mitchell.
The clear direction that I'm hearing from the Tribunal and from the AFL, that if the ball carrier's in a vulnerable position, your duty of care is to release him. But at least kicking the ball. So if you release him and he kicks the ball and it's a broken tackle, I think it's a lot to ask of players. And look, all I can say is I'm glad I'm no longer in that position to have to make a ruling, because I feel for Jack Higgins. I understand the difficulty. But when I hear the tribunal say you should have released him, it's like there needs to be a bit more of an understanding of what's going through Jack Higgins' head at the time. And I think it's a huge challenge. We understand the risks and the dangers around concussion.
I don't know the alternative. Could he have let the arm go a bit earlier, I guess, is what they would be saying. But he doesn't know. Like, he can't see the player. He can't feel it. So I think he's in an enormously difficult position.
So that's the view of our two coaches last night, is that the rules as they are going to be hard for Jack Higgins to beat. He has my sympathies here. I think that tackle took a very unexpected turn when Aaliyah, who is obliged to try to legally dispose of the footy, threw himself off balance to kick. And while Higgins was taking him to ground, I don't think he was taking him to ground in a manner where Aaliyah was going to land on his head. Is that changed when the axis of the Port defender changed?
My frustration has subsided on this. It's nearly like, as I've said to Brandy, it's like howling at the moon. It's like trying to influence something that has already been set on a course, and it's a medico-legal course, and it's decisions made to mitigate an economic downturn or an economic impost from outside of the game, or from inside the game, but from outside of the game for players that have had concussive effects. And those arguments that you heard from Brad Scott and Sam Mitchell, I would contend that if you put it, say, next to the Zach Merritt tackle on, I think it was Rivers, like about 12 months ago, you could have used those exact comments around Zach Merritt's position. How was he to know that the ball was no longer in Rivers' hands? Or how was he to, like, so you, and it's really tough to expect the tackler to know all of this. And I don't know what I'd be coaching in this circumstance. It's no difference. There is zero difference. We can say what Aaliyah's doing, and we can see that he's trying to kick it, and we can, but then other persons that are tackled are trying to break that tackle. So you've got to apply a little bit more force and try and stop them from disposing of the football. That's what a tackle is. I don't agree with the direction we've taken. I agree on protecting the head, but there are going to be some times when the head makes contact with the ground in a tackle. I don't think Jack Higgins can get off, given the template and the matrix that we've set up and the precedent that has been set. Maybe he gets down from severe to high, but even then, has he tackled a player who is more predisposed to a concussion than another? So therefore the severity changes the penalty to the person that is tackling. Two, there's other circumstances here that Aaliyah went back onto the field after being concussed 12 months ago. So the doctor's going to be even more cautious about sending him back on. So maybe that was a precaution of not sending him back on, but that affects the severity of the impact. And Higgins has to wear all of this. I'm done with it, to be honest. And to hear even Kingy saying, like, he should get off, when Kingy's been advocating, and you'll have him in after here, like, advocating around the protecting the head. And I understand that. But I just think playing the game is tough. These decisions that are made in split seconds are tough. Unless you've been in that position, you don't know how click of the fingers, blink of an eye, this needs to be done. And yet we are still, the impost on players and the decisions we're expecting them to make when you're coming opposite from 180 degrees into a ground level ball, when you're going to an aerial contest like Toby Green, when you're tackling a player, it's almost impossible to find the margins, to stay within the margins with the way the game is being set up at the moment.
Nathan Buckley, for supergroups from 1 ton to 8 ton, supergroups are the masters of Kubota excavators. So you feel like this charge will be upheld on the basis of all that we're experiencing?
Yeah, I would try to argue it down to two, to try and reduce the impact in some shape or form. And as Sam said, or what Sam Mitchell suggested, you know, was it, should he have let go of the arm earlier? I don't know what they would argue, but I think that you know, they're nearly going to have to argue the vibe, but the vibe is going against you in this because there are bigger themes at play here than just a tackle on Adelaide Oval, you know, on a nondescript round seven game. There are bigger themes at play and they relate to a medico-legal issue that the players are now accountable and responsible for and the league is accountable and responsible for, and it's impacting the way the game is played. And we can't ignore that because that's why these imposts are coming on.
Nathan Buckley in the studio for Supergroups. First picked every week for Kubota Excavators, supergroups.com.au. A little bit of art of coaching around Chris Fagan's week. How do you think he would... So lots of commentary around his press conference,
yeah,
which I sort of get, but I also get the don't separate yourself from the players in that moment. But what comes next? He's spoken before around the reviews that the players are excellent. His players are excellent in identifying and owning what's gone wrong, and they've been through this a few times. Is that a continuing cycle, or do you put a much stronger edge on it now?
Well, that has its a shelf life as well. There's only so often the players can put their hands up and say, oh, look, we should have done that and we really should have done that. And then, you know, maybe for 1 week there's a bit of a reaction, and then week two and three it drops away again. So there is that. And the game is so marginal. Like, we talk about the hope of a Harley Reid coming into West Coast, and obviously, and then Elliot Yeo, and then jumps on, like Elliot Yeo probably jumped on, and Harley Reid goes, yeah, that's where I want to be. And then Tim Kelly, and then we've got Brass and McGovern, and then all of a sudden you think, oh, wow, you know, there's some energy there, some chemistry there. It can go the other way as well. It really is in the margins. So Chris Fagan's job is tough at the moment because he's backed this playing group to a hilt, and they have supported him and followed through and with him, beside him, and got in behind him to be a top four team for a significant period of time. The amount of wins they've had in the last 5 years, the position that they've put themselves in to contend consistently over the last 5 years is the same group that's taken. It's very, very much similar. I've heard the argument about injuries. They've had the eighth most games lost to their best 22. Like, and this, that's like when you try and come up with the best 22, already you realise that the stat is flawed because that's just not the way it works. But so that puts them eighth worst, puts them, and they had the seventh least last year. So they were 11th from injuries at this stage or for the whole season last year. And they're eighth this year. So there's not a big margin in the games that are lost. So in the end, it comes back down to relationships. It comes back down to the energy and the desperation and the edge that this team either has or has not got at the moment. And the coaching challenge is, how do you get that edge back? I sense that Chris Fagan has relied on his players to drive themselves and to find it from within themselves, the motivation and the need to find that edge and to find those couple of percent to drive themselves to high performance. Whether that is still there, I think he'll die on that ditch, backing his players. But it's his imperative and it's his prerogative to push the buttons that he thinks he needs to push. Now, there may or may not be players that need to be dropped and that can be replaced. There may or may not be change that needs to occur. And he and his coaching group are responsible for making those calls. And whatever he makes, he will be judged and be accountable to. That's the nature of the job.
Would you, if you put yourself in his shoes this week, would you go for a bit of shock therapy? Having probably sort of nursed and cajoled through the first, would this be the moment to go, all right, it's shock therapy?
The challenge for him, and this is only without, apropos of, you know, I suppose what I've seen and what I know, is you need to stay true to your philosophy. And Chris Fagan's been a coach for a long period of time, a successful contributor to high-performing football programs over a long period of time, even before his iteration as Brisbane Lions senior coach. And he has a certain manner about him and he has a certain philosophy that he follows. If he all of a sudden abandons that philosophy to be something else or to do something else, it doesn't ring true to the players. So he is pot committed,
yep,
to the way that he has always been. because to do anything other than that is grating to a list that has seen you as one thing and believed and had comfort and followed and responded to this. So you can't just flip-flop and be something else, because it might have a spark, but you'll lose trust and it'll undermine the relationship. So it becomes diminishing returns of you know what you can bring to the table that's new with a group that you've had this long and established relationship with, which is probably the rub. That's the real challenge that Chris Fagan and the coaching staff find themselves in. And I think there will be, I think there has to be some sort of change. But at the same time, they've got Gold Coast this week. They've got Adelaide the week after, going to Adelaide. So they're two pretty tough weeks, I would suggest. And then you look forward. There's no easy games when you consider the predicament that they may be in.
Yeah, so they've got to win now. So whatever that is at 2-5, they've got to beat the Suns, they've got to beat the Crows, and then they've got another notionally winnable one. But if they can't win those, it'll be lost.
Which is the challenge, because if you haven't tried things, if you haven't made these shifts already, the week into a must-win game, what do you go to? Philosophically, as a coach, what do you go to? And if you go to the trust of the players that have been there and done that for you, and you've done that over a long period of time, which Chris Fagan has successfully, you're more than likely to do that again.
Nathan Buckley, his thoughts, bit of the art of coaching for you to dissect. 0433 98 11 16 40 Wings Temper Text. The difference is temper. This is Waitley for Hyundai. Drive away in a Hyundai Staria load from 49,490. T's and C's apply.
I've got this stat called shit goal stat, and we gave him three. Bip out the language, but, you know, three in the second quarter, which was really frustrating. And there was a bit, you know, period of play in the second quarter where there should have been Benny Hill music playing.
That just made me smile. Did you have a funny stat like that, Bucks?
Yeah, we would have had a few, but it's... Sometimes it's great just to call things plainly what they are. So the way I read that, it's probably a back half turnover that results in a goal it was a skill error that just coughed up a goal. So it's those cough up goals, the ones that are nearly impossible to defend. So that would be my interpretation of what would constitute a shit goal.
Yeah. Mark Williams, when he was the Port Adelaide coach, I remember once he showed me a clip and he said, well, you can't coach that. It's just such a bad error that you can't coach that. So it just struck me as put those aside. They're not going to be part of our analysis. We go, these are the outliers. You just can't be doing that.
And you could see how frustrated Dimmer was in the box through that second quarter. So three of those goals, and it's it is frustrating. But if the players realise, you sort of nearly got to acknowledge it, but then move on from it really quickly. Because if you focus too much on the skill element of it, was it the right decision? Yeah, it was the right decision, but the skill wasn't executed well. Because if you have players in the moment worried and anxious about the execution of the skill, they're not going to actually do it well. So to disarm it, to give it a name, to give it a title, to throw it in there and say, look, we're in charge of that, but that was no good. Let's move on. And we'll try and get that number down to zero in the next 4 weeks.
Ross was doing his St Kilda reading today, and he came across the piece in AFL.com, which identified the past 2 weeks have been the lowest pressure fortnight by a team dating back to 2021, and in the worst eight since champions started to collect this number. So their pressure is nowhere. And we wondered, is it a mechanic of the... of attitude, or is it a mechanic of style at the moment?
I dare say it's not something that we would expect from a Ross Lyon coach team. Both the intensity required inside to put pressure on and the structure and shape of your defence, which allows uncontested possessions, which is where the ratio comes back from that pressure perspective. St Kilda have allowed the second most uncontested marks in the last 2 weeks. Richmond have actually are 18th for allowing those uncontested marks. And I think that's a product of sitting back and defending the middle of the ground a little bit more and a little bit more of the zone defensive setup, which has been something that Ross has coached heavily. On the flip side, you've got Port Adelaide and Gold Coast, who are nearly going man on man when they defend. And they're trying to reduce uncontested marks, absolutely. So their pressure numbers are really high in turnover or in defence because they're going man on man and they're making sure that there's a body near every opposition player. But I know Ross values that system approach, but at the moment it's not as efficient as it would be. Had he, I suppose, have his squad in better nick than it is at the moment. A few of the younger players look like they're creating holes, and I don't think that he has the power and speed inside the contest to be able to put that mass pressure on. So Steele, very good contested ball winners. Ross, he's had a young fella Garcia in there, only third or fourth game, trying to put Sinclair through there. Filippo's been in there and gone out. Owens goes in as a second ruck. There's things that they've tried that they're trying to flick around, but they just haven't got that short speed. Think of a Horn Francis, a Cripps, a Dangerfield, a Dugowie, even a defensive player like a Rowbottom who actually has those two or three steps to be able to put real pressure on. St Kilda seem to lack that. So he'll throw that around trying to find that to increase pressure on the opposition.
All right. I'm going to close with Dino's text here, Bucks, which caught your eye as it came through. Chris Fagan's greatest strength is also his greatest weakness, pure loyalty. He will die on his sword being so loyal. We love what he has done, putting our great club back on the map, but it's time to shock the group. If not, the shock is he will be gone.
Real or
overreaction?
Overreaction. I really do feel like that's real. And that's not a slight on anyone at the Lions. It's not a slight on Chris Fagan, but there are moments that you have in a coaching career, in the evolution of a team, of a club, that you either step forward and change is required in some form or another. And I think the Lions are there. So the next month is really interesting to see what they can do, what shifts are made, where the players come. And if there are no shifts, do the players stand up? It's an important time of evolution for a club that, you know, went so close to the Holy Grail last year.
The Art of Coaching with Nathan Buckley and a bit of the Art of Cricket Selecting, which I bullied him into. Nathan Buckley for Supergroups from 1 ton to 8 ton. Supergroups are the masters of Kubota excavators. Bucks, thanks for playing along.
Thanks, Gerald.
Very good.